Welcome on into the 4 o'clock hour. It is Chris Thomas Turtle with you until 6 o'clock, filling in for the boys on Dukes and Bell. They'll be back tomorrow, and I'll be back in my normal slot from 6 to 10 p.m. We'll get back into the football conversation in a few minutes after a tremendous week one of college football and, of course, the NFL action getting underway on Thursday, and then the Falcons play on Sunday at 1 o'clock at home versus Tampa. Right now, though, we want to head out to the WadeFord.com hotline. Welcome in our buddy Lindsey Crosby, host of Braves Today, Daily Braves Baseball Podcast. Make sure you check it out. Lindsey, before we get into what's going on tonight, over the weekend, Chris Sale makes his triumphant return. And not only did he return, but it looked like he hasn't missed a beat since he went on the IL.
Yeah, Chris Sale was honestly some of the best that we've seen him since he came to Atlanta. Was not giving up hard contact, just really kind of flummoxed Phillies hitters. And you have to feel really good about the idea now. Obviously, they were going to pick up his option, but you feel really good about the fact that it was a fluke injury. He's back to 100%, and next season he should be able to get as close to that dominant version of Cy Sale as you reasonably can expect.
Do you expect them to pitch him every fifth day here on out?
So I would love to see them do a six-man rotation. And I think the problem right now is they brought up an extra reliever. So it's kind of hard to find that sixth guy. Right now it's Sale, Waldrick, Strider, Wentz, and Elder, because they've said Cal Quantrill's in the bullpen going forward. I'd like them to do it. You do have every Thursday off, however, from now through just about the end of the season. So it's going to functionally be a six-man rotation, as in he'll get an extra day of rest every single week.
How impressed have you been with Waldrip? Is it just a lock that because of the injuries to Holmes and Smith-Shawver that he'll be a member of the starting staff next season?
I really thought that they would go out in the offseason, spend some money on a starter, and start him in Gwinnett. But he's been so good, I really don't know how you can do that at this point. Now, obviously, roster flexibility is the biggest thing, right? That sometimes trumps performance. Guys make the roster when they don't have options. If they have options, they start off in Gwinnett. I think Braves fans' preference would be for him to be in the rotation on opening day. I honestly do think if they bring in one more starter, whether it's a top big name like a Dylan Cease or even a back-end veteran, he probably starts in Gwinnett, but he's absolutely the first guy that gets called up. And just like Spencer Schwellenbach, he may be so good when he comes back up that he never goes back down the rest of the season.
Philly series withstanding. What do you make of the uptick in offense? Is there a reason for it? Has Tim Hyers been up to something? What are you gathering?
When I look at this Braves offense, it does feel like a lot of the Tim Hyers adjustments have finally taken effect, right? They're walking a lot more. They're working more counts. They're getting deeper into starting pitchers, getting into the bullpen earlier. I don't know if it's as good of a change as we want it to be, right? Because the power production has just been middling, though. So getting Jurickson Profar back in the lineup was a big deal. Obviously, he's been fantastic at the leadoff spot, getting on quite a bit. But, yeah, they're doing all the stuff Tim Hyers wanted to do. I'm still just torn on whether or not it's ultimately, at the end of the day, a better option than trying to hit those home runs that a lot of these players have been very good at doing. Matt Olson's leading the team, but he's barely in the 20s. And it just feels like, is the ceiling of this team higher but the floor lower if they hit for more power versus doing what they're doing with Tim Hyers, where they're trying to get on base more and be more consistent on a at-bat-to-at-bat basis, but they maybe don't always get the power production that ends up being the thing that can swing some of these games, like we saw from Drake Baldwin on Sunday.
When you settle on where Michael Harris should hit on a day-in, day-out basis starting next year with a healthy roster, where is that spot?
I think if I had if I had the complete flexibility to set it, I like the idea of putting him back in the number nine spot where he was when he was young in the league, simply because he's talked about he likes hitting there. It makes him comfortable. And I think too much as fans, as analysts and all of that, we put too much stock in what the numbers say and maybe not enough in what the players express a preference for. Ronald Acuña Jr. led off for the longest time because he wanted to lead off. Brian Sitker put him there because that's where he was comfortable and that's what he wanted to do. And I think that if everything's working right with the offense, and maybe adding Ha-Seong Kim will help a shortstop, maybe you let him sit in the number nine hole and he can be the best number nine hole hitter in the league versus where you've been putting him 4, 5, 6 somewhat recently.
Does Drake Baldwin deserve to be Rookie of the Year?
I would argue that he does, simply from the perspective of he's been doing it all season and he's been contributing in about every facet of the game, whether it is defense, whether it is offensively, and he's done it with a little bit less playing time than some of the other guys that are running or in the contention for Rookie of the Year. Now, it is clear that Isaac Collins has had bigger moments, bigger individual moments. Cade Horton has impressed in his shorter stint in the league, but Drake Baldwin's done it consistently just about every single month and all season. And to me, that consistency matters. That reliability and that full season sample does matter.
Is Jake Fraley, a guy who has showcased some talent, is he a guy worth taking a look at next year and giving him the rest of the run this year to figure that out, or is he simply going to be a rental and then not back next year?
They put him in today's lineup, and I like to think that he can kind of by default be one of your options for an extra outfielder going into 2026, but I still think Atlanta needs to go out and try to make a signing to add another outfield option so you have the ability to DH Acuña and Profar. So as of now, Fraley's kind of your incumbent. They're trying him out a little bit. I think he played some left field today. He's played right field in the past. But you do definitely still need to look at, can you upgrade that position, get a starting caliber outfielder so that you can rotate your outfielders through. But as of now, it's worth giving him a look for the last month to see if maybe you did find something here in his final year before free agency.
Talking all things Braves and MLB with our buddy Lindsey Crosby, host of Braves Today. Make sure you check out the podcast and on YouTube. All right, obviously all eyes on the guy that's pitching right now, Spencer Strider. First of all, what have you seen over his last couple of starts? What's not working, and what do you think he's working on to correct that?
So one of the big things that made Spencer Strider unique back in that magical 2023 season, everybody points to the fastball velocity, and that's a big deal. But Strider's always been successful because his fastball has been one of the best in the league because of the movement profile. It has more induced vertical break, which is backspin that keeps the ball from dropping as much in the zone as it normally would. He's had more induced vertical break than almost any pitcher in baseball. This year, it's been very average as far as that goes. You combine that with the lower velocity, it's been significantly more hittable. And in his last start, Spencer Strider had an extra day or two of rest. He went to a Maven Baseball Lab here in Atlanta, did some work with those guys there, and the induced vertical break is back to the 2023 numbers. So the movement, and he actually acknowledged after the game, the movement to him is more important than the velocity. So just based on how he was able to make that significant change between starts, I feel like he can continue to improve throughout the rest of this year, but going into 26, I have full faith and confidence he'll be back to the Spencer Strider that we all know and love, that's one of the preeminent strikeout artists in this game.
My only concern with him is the emotional aspect of this game, because we've seen it eat up players, and for as long as you've watched baseball, you've seen great players struggle, and it's a lot of it's between the ears. And he's a guy that wears his emotions heavily on his sleeve. He gives you straight-laced answers in the post-game pressers. Is that something that is concerning to you? Because I've really noticed a change in his attitude, let's say, over the past couple of weeks and when he speaks.
I think he's trying really hard to walk that line between accountability and being negative and down on himself. And I'm still at the point where I think that he's trying to be accountable and being honest without making excuses. I don't quite yet see it as, you know, he's too hard on himself and he's getting into a negative mindset. You can tell he's frustrated. I'll completely agree with you there on his effectiveness or lack thereof this year. But I think he's still doing it right as far as acknowledging that he needs to be better and then being able to explain why. It's not just, oh, I suck, I'm terrible. He's able to put it into words and explain what's wrong. And that makes me feel better that it's not just self-flagellation for self-flagellation's sake, right? That he's actually aware of what he has to work on. It is definitely something I've thought about too, though, and it's something I kind of check every post game press conference and hear what he's saying just to make sure it doesn't veer a little too far. And knowing that he works with a sports psychologist on the regular makes me confident that they're going to be able to catch that before it goes too far.
Percentage chance Ozzie Albies is the starting second baseman next season?
I'm going to give you 80%, right? It feels pretty confident they're going to pick up the option. The difference between a $7 million club option and his buyout is only $3 million. It's a $4 million buyout. So Atlanta only saves $3 million by getting rid of him, and there's very little on the free agency market you can get to replace him for even seven, never mind three. So I think the only way he's not your starting second baseman is if they either trade him in the offseason to somebody else, or they pick up the option and then turn around and sign somebody else, and a new manager is willing to give the starting spot to that new person over him. So again, 80%, he's almost certainly here unless he gets traded. But I whether he keeps that job all year, that's a bigger question. But I think on opening day, he's your second baseman.
You think they're going to break the bank for a shortstop, or is this going to be another try to find 2026's version of Orlando Arcia?
Well, today's waiver claim of getting Ha-Seong Kim from the Tampa Bay Rays, provided they can get him to pick up his $16 million player option for 26, I think that's probably a signal that they didn't like the idea of breaking the bank for a Bo Bichette or having to go out and pay big money for somebody on the free agency market. So given this move that happened, a couple hours ago, I think that they're more than likely going to stick with Kim and Albies. And if they do add somebody, maybe it's a true utility man, right? No shade to Nick Allen, but it's somebody who can play multiple positions like a Willie Castro or a Dylan Moore. But I still think they prioritize an outfield bat over a middle infielder simply because of just the lack of supply on the free agency market and the cost of those guys.
Color me blind, Lindsay. I don't watch a ton of Rays baseball. What is the profile on him?
So really, really good defender. Very much a classic Korean baseball player profile. Doesn't hit for a ton of power. Really good defender. Really good speed. Really good contact. His best season in 2023, he sold 38, maybe it was 38 bags, hit 15 or so home runs, won a utility gold glove, playing second, short, and third for the Padres. He's been dealing with injuries, right? He missed the end of last season, started this season with a shoulder, after shoulder surgery, had a back issue that's sidelined him recently, but very high floor player when he's healthy and somebody who got MVP votes in 2023 for his consistency. So I think if nothing else, he's like Nick Allen if Nick Allen had at least a league average bat. And that's what everybody's been asking for 3 months now, is if Nick Allen could hit, we'd be happy with him. This is a Nick Allen who can hit.
Lindsay, appreciate the time. As always, we'll be chatting soon, and we'll be checking you out on Braves Today on a podcast and on the YouTube page. Thanks so much.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
All right, that is Lindsay Crosby there of Atlanta Braves Today. Make sure you go check out the podcast there. All right, when we get back, one of my favorite segments, hasn't done this with producer E in a while. Let's do producer six pack, shall we? Six questions, four sports of any kind and two lifestyle questions of E's choosing. And then we'll get back into an NFL conversation with Joe Patrick, our Falcons insider, at the bottom of the hour. Busy 4 o'clock hour coming straight your way. It's Chris Thomas tonight, Turtle, and for the boys on Dukes and Bell, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.